Wednesday, August 13th, 2025. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is going well. Hope you had a good weekend. I hope you, your family, your friends, everyone in your world is staying strong and healthy right now. And hey, we are getting into a fun time of season. It is on the horizon. Gonna have college football here soon. Gonna have the NFL here soon. But it's not here quite yet. However, and you know me, this is not my thing, but Major League Baseball is actually starting to heat up in a few ways. We have a number of tight division races, and they look like they may come down to the wire. And I mean, I can't even believe I'm saying it, but kind of starting to watch a little bit of MLB. Over in the American League, the American League East is tight. Toronto has a slight lead on those surging Boston Red Sox. And the Yankees, meanwhile, are starting to fade. What is going on there? I mean, could we really end up with a Major League Baseball playoffs and the Yankees not get in? I mean, it's possible, right? The American League West is also getting tight. We have the Astros with Carlos Correa back on the field for them. They've got a slight lead over the Seattle Mariners, who seem like they always are kind of expected to do something, but they never do. The Rangers are in the hunt as well over there. In the National League, all three divisions are very, very tight. And yes, even that National League West is tight because the Los Angeles Dodgers haven't been able to shake the San Diego Padres. I mean, the most expensive team in history, well, they've been banged up. And the Padres, meanwhile, have been red hot. Surely that lineup is going to take over eventually, right? The Dodgers just have too much. Once they get everyone healthy, they'll just take over. Right? They will, right? But we also saw some Major League Baseball history this past week when Jen Powell officially became the first female umpire in Major League Baseball history. That took place on Sunday. You know, it took more than a century of baseball for a woman to get that opportunity. And Powell had certainly paid her dues. She had worked more than 1,200 games across a decade of umpiring in the minor leagues. And then on Sunday, Jen Powell stood behind home plate for the first pitch in the first game of a doubleheader between the Atlanta Braves and the Miami Marlins. And it was a historical moment. There were dozens of family members. There are friends, supporters who came out to the field with handwritten signs to cheer on Powell. Powell making her story, one sign read. The time has come for one and all to play ball, another sign said. So Marlins second baseman Otto Lopez stepped up to home plate to face Braves pitcher Joey Wentz. Hey, the cell phone cameras were flashing. Fans took in this amazing moment in baseball history. And then on the very first pitch, Powell caught a pitch by Wentz that was nearly a foot inside the plate as a strike.
Oh.
Well, hey, we all make mistakes, right? It was just a slip up. But then after the game, Powell admitted she had a dream the night before about Lopez. She said it wasn't really what he had said. It was more just how he had said it in the dream. And she wasn't sure why, but like, she just thinks it's funny how he always says one thing, but does another. And sometimes when Otto doesn't say what he's feeling, he's actually saying a lot more than if he had. And if he wants to go out with his friends, fine, just say so. Just go, have fun, and don't worry about her. Whatever all that meant. Anyways, congrats to Major League Baseball and umpire Jen Powell. This was one amazing historic accomplishment. I can't wait to see her take one more major step for women everywhere when she botches a call in the postseason, too.
You ugly, hate-filled man.
Hey, I may be ugly and hate-filled, but I've, what was the third thing you said?
Hey, today on Dose, with the college football and NFL seasons coming quickly, we are going to take a look at some of the biggest early games on each schedule that could end up being very impactful this season. Plus, every team in the NFL right now has some hope, right? Everyone is hoping to get out of the gates quickly and start racking up those wins. Well, as our Daily Dose Top 5 will show us, sometimes that isn't nearly as important as you might even think. But first, speaking of making history, we saw, well, sort of some history made in the NFL preseason this past week, because Jacksonville Jaguars kicker Cam Little stole the spotlight from Travis Hunter's NFL debut by hitting a 70-yard field goal during Saturday night's game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Hey, had it not happened during the preseason, Little's kick would have broken Justin Tucker's NFL record by a full 4 yards. That's amazing. He had room to spare, too. And, you know, I don't know that much about Cam Little, I'll be honest. I really don't. But if he's anything like Justin Tucker, I will warn the massage therapists in the greater Jacksonville area, be careful, is all I'm saying. Be careful. It wasn't all good news in the NFL, as we have already seen a few significant injuries in this preseason. The Indianapolis Colts lost quarterback Anthony Richardson, at least for a little bit, to a dislocated finger. Just weeks after signing a massive contract extension, the Los Angeles Chargers lost tackle Rashawn Slater. He suffered a torn patellar tendon in practice. Minnesota Vikings receiver Rondale Moore blew his left knee, and he's gone for the year. Baltimore Ravens rookie cornerback Bilal Cohen was carted off the field on Thursday night, also a victim of a knee injury. The Kansas City Chiefs lost safety Deion Bush to a torn Achilles. We weren't done. Miami Dolphins running back Alexander Mattison will miss the entire 2025 NFL season due to a neck injury that he suffered against the Bears in their first game on Sunday. And Friday night's preseason game between the Detroit Lions and the Atlanta Falcons was actually canceled in the fourth quarter when Lions defensive back Maurice Norris tried to tackle Falcons running back Nathan Carter and suffered a neck injury. Now, they say Norris is recovering and he should be okay. These just keep racking up. But I want you to remember these preseason injuries when the NFL bumps their season to 18 games, because that is coming. They are going to drop either all or all but one of these preseason games, and then they're going to add one more game to the regular season. Because you can't keep charging season ticket holders full price for these games where there's so many injuries, not much benefit. Oh, and they keep canceling these preseason games as well. That's been done a couple times now. Get ready. They're going to say, hey, fellas, we're going to do you a favor. We're going to cancel the preseason. Great. And we're going to add another regular season game. Don't say you didn't know, because it is coming. A little bit of college sports news this week, as three departing members of the Mountain West Conference are actually suing the league, alleging it improperly withheld millions of dollars and misled them about a plan to accelerate Grand Canyon's membership into the Mountain West. Boise State, Colorado State, and Utah State have filed an updated lawsuit in the District Court of Denver, arguing the conference and the commissioner willfully disregarded the league's bylaws and intentionally and fraudulently deprived the schools of their membership rights. The three schools are all headed to the Pac-12 after this coming season, and they are seeking damages for millions of dollars because they say there's harm that was caused by the Mountain West, including withholding of money earned by Boise State for playing last year in the college football playoff. Now, the three outgoing schools argue the Mountain West exit fees, which could range from $19 million to $38 million, are also unlawful and they shouldn't be enforced. And then, of course, the lawsuit says the Mountain West concealed a plan to move Grand Canyon into the league without informing the departing schools. Now, I'm not sure how this lawsuit ends up. If I had to guess, I would bet the schools in the conference will end up settling out of court and some money will exchange hands. But put that stuff aside just real quick. One brief note. The new Pac-12 is going to have Oregon State, Washington State, Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State, San Diego State, Texas State, and Utah State. And then Gonzaga is going to be a non-football member. Hey, I get that's an average football conference, but that new Pac-12 is going to be loaded in basketball. That conference is going to be legit. I can't wait for that new Pac-12 to start, because that's going to be a fun hoops conference. Finally, you know, I tried to avoid it. I wanted to avoid it. I haven't talked about it. But I'm afraid I'm going to have to talk about it. Because there is a new trend taking place in the WNBA. I'm going to try to get through this. Bear with me. If you've got youngsters with you and you need to plug their ears, I don't know. Do what you need to do. Don't say you weren't warned. But apparently, we have a new trend taking place in the WNBA where fans are lobbing sex toys out onto the court in the middle of games. There, I said it. It's out. They say a group of crypto investors is claiming responsibility for a series of incidents where green sex toys were tossed onto WNBA courts, adding a strange wrinkle to a league that's already kind of weird. But so far, WNBA games in Atlanta, Brooklyn, Chicago, LA, and Phoenix have now seen bright green, well, let's just say objects, thrown out onto the court during games. The incidents have spurred at least two arrests and an uproar from the WNBA and their fans. Now, I'll be honest. This story would actually be kind of funny, except that, of course, the WNBA takes itself way too seriously. You think I'm wrong? You're like, no, they don't. They don't take themselves that seriously. Check out this quote from Minnesota Lynx head coach Cheryl Reeve last week. This has been going on for centuries. The sexualization of women. This is the latest version of that. And it's not funny. And it should not be the butt of jokes on any radio shows or in print or in any comments. Now, I've said before, the WNBA takes himself too seriously. And the WNBA is just completely tone deaf. But please remember this. Before we go down, this is a sexualization thing. This is an anti-woman thing. This is a homophobic thing. Please remember, we have seen this happen before at NFL games. I can think of one specifically that took place in Buffalo during a Bills game. Was that the sexualization of men? Was that homophobic? Or was that also a sexualization of women? Because I don't know what that was, but we've seen it before. Let's not act like this is brand new. Once again, find me a more tone-deaf group than the WNBA. Wait a second. Remember when the WNBA players wore that pay us what we deserve t-shirt at the All-Star game? Huh. Maybe this is just what people think they deserve?
You ugly, hate-filled man.
Hey, I may be ugly and hate-filled, but I've, what was the third thing you said?
So the college football and NFL seasons are coming quickly, and it is interesting every year. Because with football games only being played once a week, we're always trying to solve the mystery of who is who in the NFL and who is who in college. I mean, teams play one week, they look great. We think we have them figured out. Then next week, they look terrible. Okay, so who is this team really? Well, today on the Daily Dose, we are going to look at a few games very early in the season. I mean, in the first few weeks in both college football and the NFL. And they are going to give us some big clues as to who is who. Let's start off in college football, where sometimes I feel like it's a little bit easier to figure out these teams because there's only so many truly quality opponents on each team's schedule. Well, get ready for some early games that are going to be very revealing. In week one, August 30th. Hey, don't look now, kids, but that is coming very, very quickly. 10 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. I'm convinced I know why they're doing this at 10 a.m. because each team has young players. They don't want them to be that nervous. The number one Texas Longhorns are going to be facing number two in the coaches poll, number three in the AP poll, Ohio State Buckeyes in the horseshoe. Quarterback Arch Manning will be getting his first start for Texas. Ohio State has new coordinators on both sides of the ball, and they are going to be trying to figure out which quarterback is really going to take that job and run with it. Hey, both of these teams are loaded this year. And losing this game won't take either of them out of contention unless you get blown out. Either way, this first game is going to give us some big clues as to how each of these teams are going to be this year. I can't wait for that one. Also in week one, later that day at 5:30 p.m., we will get the number 9 LSU Tigers going to Death Valley to face the number 6 Clemson Tigers. Hey, Brian Kelly and LSU need to win an opener. They are currently 0-3 in their opening game under BK. LSU quarterback Garrett Nussmeier, they're already saying he might be a little bit banged up. And he should be one of the top quarterbacks in the country. But it isn't just LSU. Clemson needs this game too. Dabo Swinney is hoping this team can get back to the national championship kind of picture. Quarterback Kate Klubnik needs a big start. We've got SEC versus ACC, Dabo versus Brian Kelly. Hey, this is going to be very interesting in week one. Fast forward to week two, where we will get an evening game that features number 14 Michigan going to Norman, Oklahoma to face the Sooners. Now, remember, Michigan head coach Sherrod Moore is a Sooner alum, and he is going to take that self-administered suspension in week 3 and 4 against Central Michigan and Nebraska, of course, for all of that, you know, Jim Harbaugh cheating stuff. Also keep in mind, Oklahoma head coach Brent Venables, he needs to win. He needs to win badly. Michigan versus Oklahoma in week 2, that's going to be big. In week 3, we get another revealing game when number 21 Texas A&M goes to South Bend to face the number 5 Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Of course, the Irish went all the way to the national title game last year. But remember, they had to kind of hold on for dear life to get past A&M in that season opener. Now, Notre Dame lost some people. I still think they're a playoff contender, and I think A&M is very dangerous this year. Don't say you didn't know. They didn't lose much at all. This could be a huge game in week 3. Let's fast forward just a little bit. We go to week 5, where we get 2 early season conference games, and both of these are in primetime on September 27th. Hey, block that day out on your calendar. First up, we get a Big Ten battle where number 7 Oregon goes to number either 2 or 3 Penn State. Hey, spin it however you want. Penn State needs to beat someone, like a real, live, actual ranked team. Also, remember the last time we saw Oregon? They were getting curb stomped in the college football playoff by Ohio State by 20. This game will give the winner a leg up in the Big Ten. This is a big one. Also in week 5, we get a big SEC game when the number 8 Alabama Crimson Tide go to Athens to face the number 4 Georgia. Hey, I know it will only be late September, but looking at the schedule, the winner of this game is going to have an inside track to get to the SEC championship game. Bama needs a bounce back year this year. They stumbled a bit last year. Georgia is still Georgia, but they lost some people. These are 5 big college football games that are going to give us some very big clues as to who is who, and they are going to all be played before we ever get to the month of October. I can't wait for it. Well, let's move to the NFL, which I actually think is more difficult to calculate because on any given Sunday, any team can win. I mean, every NFL team has talent. So here are a few early season games that are also going to tell us a lot going forward. And again, we're keeping them early. We start off in week 1, and I'm skipping the Dallas-Philly game, which should be interesting on Thursday night. But we get the defending AFC champion Kansas City Chiefs going to Los Angeles to face their AFC West rival, the LA Chargers. Now, both of these teams have already gotten some rough injury news this year, but both of them also have big expectations. Also, the Chiefs have a 7-game winning streak against the Chargers. Can Patrick Mahomes keep that rolling? Is Jim Harbaugh going to get his quarterback, Justin Herbert, to finally live up to his expectations for a week 1 game? Oh, Chargers versus Chiefs is great. Also, in week 1, we're not done. We get a rematch of the AFC divisional playoff game last year between the Baltimore Ravens and the Buffalo Bills. Now, in that game, the Ravens put up 416 total yards to the Bills' 273. However, the Ravens had some ill-timed turnovers, maybe a drop or two. Will this game make up for that? Of course not. But it might give us a hint as to how each of these teams is going to look this year. Moving forward to week 2, I want to keep an eye on that Washington Commanders team this year because they exceeded all expectations last year. They go all the way to the NFC title game where they lose to Philly. Well, in week 2, the Commanders will go to Green Bay to face a Packers team that I don't even know what to expect. Last year, the Packers looked good at times. They looked bad at times. They had problems with consistency. but they made it to the postseason before they also lost to the Eagles. Well, are the Commanders going to take a step back this year? Are the Packers going to take a step forward this year? I don't know, but I can't wait to find out. Also in week two, we get another game between two teams that are hoping to take a big step forward when the Tampa Bay Buccaneers go to Houston to face the Texans. Now, the Bucs were 10-7 last year. They lost to Washington in a really tight wildcard game. They actually played Washington pretty tough. Was Tampa maybe better than we thought? Not sure. And then the Houston Texans saw quarterback C.J. Stroud take a bit of a step backward last year, but then he also did rally them to a playoff win over the Chargers before they ended up losing to the Chiefs. This game in week two could be very interesting. Finally, we get to week three, where we could see some major fireworks because the Cincinnati Bengals and that high-powered Joe Burrow offense will go to Minnesota to face a Vikings team that just might have all the pieces, but we need to see what quarterback J.J. McCarthy is going to look like in live action. Of course, last year he was lost for the season with that knee injury. Sam Darnold took over and led the Vikings to a 14-3 record. Joe Burrow versus J.J. McCarthy. Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins against Justin Jefferson and T.J. Hockenson. Oh yeah, this could be a shootout. This could be a really fun game. And this could be another early season clue as to how each of these teams is going to do. Remember, you should be stopping by DailyDoseSports.com each week to check out what new things we have going on over there. We have links to the podcast. We have links to video. We have links to new articles this week. In fact, I posted one this week about the Denver Broncos and their opening preseason game. There was some good, there was some bad, and there was some ugly, so make sure you're stopping by there. You can also email the podcast anytime you want, DailyDoseSports@gmail.com. We will always take the time to respond, and we just might end up using what you send us here on the show. But if you need a Daily Dose t-shirt, you need a hoodie, you need a sweatshirt, you need a baseball cap, they have it all over there. Just go check out what we have going on over at DailyDoseSports.com. Now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. So like we just talked about, we have some really interesting early season NFL games coming when this regular season kicks off, and that is just a few weeks away. I mean, we only looked at 5 games, and there's a million other ones out there that are great matchups. And of course, every team wants to win their opener. Statistically, it honestly doesn't matter that much, but you just feel a little bit better when you start the season with a W, right? But what about when you start the season with a bunch of W's? What about when you start the season with a winning streak? Does that guarantee success? Well, a little. But today, our Daily Dose Top 5 is counting down the best starts ever to an NFL season. And we'll look at how each one of these teams actually ended up. So we actually have a 4-way tie at number 5. Because 4 teams have started the NFL season by winning their first 13 games. It's a lot of wins. In 2011, Aaron Rodgers led the Green Bay Packers to win their first 13 games, but they would eventually lose to the New York Giants in the playoffs. The 2009 New Orleans Saints won their first 13 games as head coach Sean Payton and quarterback Drew Brees would go on to win Super Bowl 44. The 2005 Indianapolis Colts won 13 games as Peyton Manning and that offense were torching opponents, but then they got to the playoffs and they actually got smacked in the mouth by the Pittsburgh Steelers and lost in the divisional round. And then the 1998 Denver Broncos were coming off of winning the Super Bowl with Terrell Davis and John Elway in 98. They started the season 13-0, and then they lost a game to the New York Giants. But the Broncos would rally. They would end up winning Super Bowl 33. Starting the season 13-0 seems like you'd almost be guaranteed to win the Super Bowl. But today, we have 4 teams that did it, and the Super Bowl winning percentage was only 50%. Those 13-game winning streaks to start the season come in today tied at number 5 and, I guess, number 4. So we move to number 3. And we have another tie. But it's just between two teams. Because back in 2015, the Carolina Panthers had a pretty good defense, and they had the MVP in quarterback Cam Newton. They started the season with an amazing 14-0 record. They rolled to the Super Bowl, but then in Super Bowl 50, they were beaten by a little bit better defense when Von Miller and the Denver Broncos were the beginning of the end of Newton's career. Also starting with 14 wins in a row were the 2009 Indianapolis Colts. Peyton Manning and that offense got to avoid their nemesis, the New England Patriots, so they went all the way to the Super Bowl. And in Super Bowl 44, they were beat by those New Orleans Saints in the big game. Both of our number three teams started the season 14-0. Neither one of them ended up being Super Bowl champions. They come in today at number three. We moved to number two on our list of teams that started the NFL season the strongest, and we get to one that still owns a slice of history, because the 1972 Miami Dolphins are the only team in NFL history to finish the entire season without a single loss. Don Shula led a team that featured both Earl Morrill and Bob Greasy at quarterback. Plus, they had Mercury Morris, they had Larry Zonka, they had Jim Kick, they had that nasty defense that held opponents to just 12 points per game. The Dolphins went 14-0 in the regular season. Then they beat Cleveland and Pittsburgh in the playoffs, and then they beat Washington in Super Bowl VII. The 72 Miami Dolphins won 17 games in a row to start the season. They won the Super Bowl, and they come in today at number two. So we reach the number one team on our list of NFL teams that have had the strongest start in history, and we go to the 2007 New England Patriots. Bill Belichick had maybe his best team ever, with Tom Brady and Randy Moss and Wes Welker and Lawrence Maroney and Kevin Falk and Teddy Bruschi and Junior Seau and Rodney Harrison. That team was loaded. The Patriots finished the regular season 16-0. They beat the Jaguars. They beat the Chargers to go 18-0. And they went to Super Bowl 42, where they were double-digit favorites to beat the 10-6 New York Giants. Of course, no one told the Giants. They beat up Brady, and of course, Eli Manning made that improbable throw to David Tyree, and the Giants pulled off one of the biggest upsets in Super Bowl history. But the New England Patriots have the longest winning streak at 18 games to start an NFL season in history. They just didn't win the Super Bowl. Hey, expectations change when you start the season so strong. The target on your back gets bigger as you win all those games, and you start feeling the pressure of winning every single week. And all those things tell us why, out of the eight teams on our list today, only three of them ended up winning the Super Bowl. Hey, next week on the Daily Dose, playtime is over. The football season is going to be getting here. We will be breaking down the coming college football season as only we can. We will be looking at the best teams, the Heisman hopefuls, and we will be making our picks for the second 12-team college football playoff ever, and just might have a little bit of a bonus surprise for you next week as well. So be sure you check out the Daily Dose, and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you so much to each and every one of you for listening to the Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, and for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. I'd say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
You ugly, hate-filled man.
Hey, I may be ugly and hate-filled, but I've, what was the third thing you said?